Welcome to the Potter Marsh Winter Podcast, an audio tour of one of Alaska's most popular wildlife viewing spots. In this podcast, brought to you by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and Audubon Alaska, we'll learn about the interesting ways animals at Potter Marsh try to survive Alaska's long, cold winter. I'm your host, Ken Flynn, and here with me is John Shane, senior scientist with Audubon Alaska in Anchorage.
When the days are short and temperatures are really low, like 20, 30 below zero, you're probably going to lose a bunch of chickadees. You know, and moose, if the snow gets deep and they have to expend a lot of energy and they don't find good food, we'll see very significant winter mortality. Winter is really a bottleneck. It's a tough period of time.
And yet, there is wildlife here year-round. Let's start with the birds. Which birds can be found at the marsh in winter?
There are a few birds that stay at Potter Marsh. The smart ones, of course, head south. Most of the birds head south. But the old favorites like the raven and the magpie and maybe a few Steller's jays, chickadees, primarily black-capped chickadees, and maybe a few boreal chickadees occur at Potter Marsh in the wintertime. Pine siskins and pine grosbeaks and common red poles, and perhaps a few hairy woodpeckers and downy woodpeckers. But those are kind of the mainstays of the winter birds at Potter Marsh.
So most birds leave because winter here is too cold and they can't find enough food. How do the birds that stay survive?
So let's take one example. Let's take the black-capped chickadee, which is a tiny little bird that weighs maybe half an ounce. It has a very unique adaptation to cold winters. For example, you know, when it gets down to 20 below zero, this tiny little bird, in the shortest days of the year, it has to get all of its food in 5 or 6 hours. And then it goes and finds some kind of a crevice or a cavity where it gets in and roosts for the evening, usually by themselves, often in birch trees and little holes in the birch trees. And they have an adaptation where they kind of hunker up and they fluff their feathers and they try to stay warm, but their temperature actually drops maybe 10 degrees Fahrenheit or more, and they go into kind of an evening torpor where their metabolism just slows way down, and they can lose up to 10% of their body weight overnight. Then when they get out, they go and they search for seeds, they search for insects or insect eggs or pupa. And one of the other really interesting aspects of black-capped chickadees is that in the midsummer and fall, they cache food. They go out and they eat and they find food. The days are longer and they go and put them under little crevices here and there. And they have hundreds of stored food sites, if not thousands, and they can actually find these. They go back to them in the wintertime. So when you think of a bird brain, you might want to take that as a compliment, because their brains actually expand during this period when they're caching these food items, where they can go back and find them later in the wintertime.
And what about mammals? Which mammals are found at Potter Marsh in winter, and how do they survive?
Well, the mammals at Potter Marsh are many of the same mammals that are there during the summertime. And we'll start small, from shrews to, you know, several species of voles to muskrats, a few beaver. Then you get the snowshoe hare and the red squirrels, and you have the foxes and the coyotes that come through and feed on the smaller mammals. And then you get up to the moose. So those are some of the common mammals that you might see at Potter Marsh in the winter. Black bears will occur there in the summertime, and even an occasional brown bear, but there are not very many around in the wintertime there.
And one of those mammals, the muskrat, also caches food like the chickadee. Tell us about that.
They have push-ups in the summertime. They stash in the fall. They stash green plants and stems and roots and tubers and things in places. They stack them up in the marsh, and then when the ice comes in, you see these areas of vegetation sticking up called push-ups. And those are places where the muskrats will swim under the ice, and they'll come up and they'll feed there, and they get up and they can rest and they can, you know, breathe, and then they go back under the ice and go into a burrow. So that's one strategy that's real common that you'll see throughout Potter Marsh. Another really interesting winter survival strategy is the black bear, which will den from sea level to up in the mountains, but probably most of them are out away from Potter Marsh. But black bears go into the den sometime in October. They come out sometime in April or May. So for half of the year or more, they're in a little tiny winter den site, and they don't eat, they don't drink, they don't urinate, they don't defecate. They're going into really a hibernation where their temperature drops maybe 10 degrees, but not very much. It's not like a ground squirrel that gets very dormant because black bears can wake up. But their respiration drops quite a bit, and their pulse rate might go from a resting pulse rate of maybe 60 beats per minute down to 6 beats per minute. So they are really in a dormant circumstance. And then think of a female black bear, which is going to give birth to 1 to 4 cubs in her den in January, and then she's nursing these little cubs all the way through the late winter and into spring. So they've got an amazing strategy to get through this winter period. And the reason they den basically is because they're large animals. They need lots of food. And in the wintertime, the high quality food just isn't there.
And on the other end of the size spectrum, we have voles. Here to tell us about these tiny rodents common to Potter Marsh is Smiley Shields, a longtime Anchorage resident who studied voles for his doctorate in biology.
The whole strategy of voles is to be able to reproduce faster than the rest of the animals kill them off. I mean, they are, like I say, very easy prey for just about anything that can catch anything. Voles are extraordinarily important animals, essentially because they are willing to die like flies. They breed unbelievably fast. The gestational period is somewhere between 14 days and 21 days. The young are mature at 21 days after they've been born, and the animals really have a very short lifespan, probably 1 year in the woods. Every predator that you can think about will eat voles. Like I say, they're an absolutely critical part of the ecosystem because just about any animal can kill them, and they kill a lot of them.
I understand that during cold snaps, large numbers of voles will also freeze to death. But many also make it through the winter. How do they keep alive being so small?
In the first place, just keeping warm is a big problem. The smaller you are, the bigger the problem it is. I mean, that's how come the voles, for instance, spend their entire winter under the snow. They don't really build any nest to speak of, but they do get in places where there's a lot of litter around and where they can get right in. And the little hidey holes they have are just the same size they are, so that there's no colder air getting in. They survive in the winter because they spend most of their time under the snow. If you were to go out here, for instance, and look around where the grasses are, you will find places, if the snow is thin, where it will fall in and you'll be able to see. And particularly if you were to be here just after breakup, you would be able to see a lot of little trails that they have established to get from one place to the other. They've found out that's the most efficient way to do it.
In winter, wildlife is often hidden from sight, like the voles and fish. We rarely think of fish in winter, but they're here, frozen beneath the ice. Here to talk about that is Dan Bosch, a sport fish biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and area manager for Anchorage, the North Gulf Coast, and Prince William Sound. Which fish are found here at Potter Marsh?
Here at Potter Marsh, we have all five species of the Pacific salmon that we find in North America. We have Chinook salmon or King salmon. We have Pink salmon, Chum salmon, Coho salmon, and most recently, within the last 10 years, Sockeye salmon or Red salmon have also started to pioneer their way into Potter Marsh. And resident fish, we have Dolly Varden, we have freshwater sculpins, and we also have another fish called the Alaska blackfish, which is not native to this part of Alaska, but has been introduced into the Anchorage area.
Tell us about the life cycle of salmon. What are the salmon doing beneath the ice at Potter Marsh during winter?
Well, let's say that we start out in the summer with a male and a female salmon coming back to Potter Marsh, and they'll be swimming up Rabbit Creek. What they'll want to look for is a nice, clean patch of gravel that's free of silt or mud, that has good, steady stream flow that allows the eggs to get oxygen. And what they'll do is they'll build a red. A red is also, you could say, a fish nest. They'll dig a hole in the gravel. They'll deposit both the eggs and the milk together, and that will fertilize the eggs. Then they cover that back up, and they cover that back up with this nice fresh gravel, and that protects the eggs from predation, from Dolly Varden and from blackfish. Now, if you're a king salmon, a coho salmon, or a red salmon, you're going to rear in Potter Marsh 1 to 2 years usually, and then you'll go out into the ocean, and in the ocean you'll spend 1 to 5 years. If you're a coho salmon, you'll spend 1 year, one winter, one summer, and then you come back. And if you're king salmon, maybe up to 5 years.
And how do fish live under the ice? Don't they need to eat? And how do they get enough oxygen?
Believe it or not, they're really not doing much in the wintertime. Because there's much less water in the wintertime, there's no runoff from streams, there's no melt from glaciers or anything like that. There's quite a bit less water, so they're going to have to seek a deep spot in the Potter Marsh itself. And what they're going to look for is they're going to go into the deep holes in the creek where there is continuing water that continues to flow to provide oxygen for them, or they're going to get near those upwelling springs. Because the springs will, while they slow down during the wintertime, they will continue to flow and will continue to provide oxygen. They rarely feed in the winter. It gets so cold that their bodily functions really, really slow down, and they don't eat much. They'll be opportunistic feeders, but they can't really digest much at that water temperature. And if you're a little fish, you're going to be in an area near those deep holes, but still hiding, because a bigger fish will opportunistically want to eat you, so you got to hide from them too during the winter.
And last but not least, we also find humans at Potter Marsh in winter, but they're usually here enjoying themselves, not merely trying to survive. When the ice is thick enough and conditions are right, you can find people here ice skating, kite surfing, and just exploring. On this chilly November day, we stop to talk to Bob Kaufman and his wife Yael and their two young children.
It's early November, and we don't have enough snow to ski, so we're ice skating here on Potter's Marsh, which is great, because you can just drive down the highway, park your car, and jump out. And I'm here with Ari and Alana and my wife. And Ari, how old are you? Ari says 3. And Alana's 1. And we went into the wind, and it was really slow, and we got way down the marsh. And at one point, I actually broke through, and I got my foot wet. But then we turned around and came with the wind, and we were flying, weren't we, Ari? We were going fast blast coming back with the wind, and it's beautiful. It's probably in the mid-20s, and there's a crisp air, and it's so neat because there are birds here in the summer, and now it's frozen, and we can go through the grass, kind of flying like an airplane over the ice. Ari and I have had a great time. Right, Ari? That's a yes.
And with that, we'll sign off our winter podcast as we look forward to spring and the return of the sun. Thanks to Smiley Shields, John Shane, and Dan Bosch for sharing their knowledge of the wildlife at Potter Marsh, and to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for their generous funding of these podcasts. Thanks, too, to the Bird Treatment and Learning Center for their support of this project.